Let's just hope for the
Hey, that's fine. That's
best.
the
Okay. Yeah, so we're
motto this
gonna
year of 2012, right? Or 2010. What are we, 2020?
Hola, mi nombre es Katia, soy desarrolladora full stack de la Ciudad de México. Soy coorganizadora de varias conferencias como PyCon Latam y DjangoCon Estados Unidos. Particularmente en PyCon Estados Unidos, ayudo a organizar los open spaces y por eso pensé que es buena idea empezar a organizarlos digitales. Cada semana me acompañará un invitado para platicar de algún tema elegido ya sea por el invitado o por la comunidad. Para proponer algún tema, nos puedes escribir a contacto@espaciosabiertos.dev. Esta semana me acompaña Jeff Triplett, que es socio en Revsys, presidente de DEFNA, que es la fundación que organiza los DjangoCon en Estados Unidos, y miembro de la junta directiva de la Python Software Foundation. Hablaremos primero de los múltiples proyectos que ha hecho Jeff, la forma en que los ataca, y cómo lo lleva de idea a producto en unas pocas horas. Y al final hablaremos de un tema serio que son las pasadas elecciones a la Python Software Foundation y el resultado que dejó incómodo a varios. Les recuerdo que este capítulo está grabado en inglés y si van al sitio espaciosabiertos.dev pueden encontrar la transcripción de la conversación que tuve con Jeff y próximamente podrán encontrar la traducción.
Okay, so what kind of student were you growing up?
I was a terrible student. I either was really into something and that's all I wanted to do, or I would struggle with it. I'm also dyslexic, which I didn't know. And so I grew up in a very like rural part of the US. And so growing up where I grew up, we didn't really have teachers that could identify it. Okay. But when I was in my first semester of college, probably like a month in, one of my college professors, she told me, "You're dyslexic." And I'm like, "What?" And so one of her sons were, I guess. And so that's when I first started like realizing that like I switched words and I switched sentences and switched stuff. So I really struggled with that. And if you ask me number questions and stuff, I'm really good at like telling you one number, but I write down something different.
Okay.
And so, and with coding, it's kind of interesting because that's a thing too. Like there are times I've written stuff and someone said like, "Why in the world did you do that way backwards?" or something. So people who've worked with me for a while kind of know. And I've kind of learned some tricks over the years too to get around that. But
and was that the time where you kind of chose technology, or was that later in your life?
You know, we were really fortunate in that I had a teacher who was actually a neighbor of mine. We lived in the country, so it was very, very, very rural, very farm. But I had this teacher, and I remember if you opened like a bank account, they would give you an Apple IIe computer. And so I think she was like my fourth grade teacher, maybe. She ended up getting this computer. And since there was only like 20 people in the class, we all got an opportunity to take it home for a weekend. So I remember like running this computer and getting to play with like BASIC. And so in my mind, like I remember picking up some magazines, like I think it was called 321 Contact Magazine as like, you know, a third or fourth grader. And then I realized I could like bring, because you could check out books at our library. You couldn't check out magazines for some reason. They probably thought we'd tear them up and we probably would have. So I would actually take paper in and write down the basic code. And then of course I would mess it up. So the next week I'd bring it back and then have to re-scribble down what I did. Okay. Because they would do things like magic tricks. And so in my mind, they would show a little photo of like somebody pulling a rabbit out of the hat. And I'm like, wow, I could actually write these really cool, you know, programs. But then reality was, it was like printing text on the screen, which was not as cool, but still neat. So that's kind of like what got me in on the bug of like, wow, here's this machine I can, you know, tell it things to do and come up with like practical applications and stuff. Right. So
For me, it was a funny story because it's mostly the same. My dad got us a computer. I was like 16, but I started doing email and reading stuff. I never once thought about coding. And so looking back, I always feel like it was such a big missing opportunity for me, because I could have started way earlier. And I don't know, it never crossed my mind. And I never had any friends that were coding. So I look back at that like a little frustrated. And
but you're a successful software engineer.
Yeah, finally. Nah, I'm just kidding. Next question. How would you describe yourself? Like, you're a coder, like a software engineer. just that?
I guess kind of all of these things.
Okay.
I like to code. And so if I could work on my own stuff, like own projects and stuff, that's what I would be the most happy doing, I guess. Okay. So I like being a programmer. I think strength-wise, though, I kind of consider myself more from like a maybe like a leadership or a business kind of mind.
Okay.
And so like some of the projects I've worked on with like DjangoCon US and Defna, those have definitely been more businessy kinds of stuff. You know, like organizing and stuff is kind of a leadership thing and helping people, you know, do things they're good at. So yeah, it's all over. I'm definitely a dad. That's kind of one of my most challenging roles right now. But it's really good. Community organizer, I probably take the most pride in that. Like, okay. I think we've done some really good stuff as a group. And so,
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm probably going to be very bad at giving small, concise answers to things, but it's kind of complicated. And I guess helping people is what I really like doing. And so if I can help people, that's what's big. So, and then sometimes in projects, like sometimes that's leading, sometimes that's not leading. Sometimes that's just getting out of the way or, you know, helping to make sure that, is this really a barrier or is this just someone's done the same thing for 20 years and they just need to let someone else do it?
The theme for this episode is going to be side projects. And for you, I wanted to discuss this part that is from idea to product, because my talks with you, you mentioned that you get random ideas and then like start working on them, but you don't, I'm asking, do you have like a process to get these ideas or they just come to you?
I really like keeping up with what's kind of new. Okay. And so sometimes it is so I do come up with lots of ideas, lots of bad ideas, lots of ideas I never really follow through on. But sometimes like one will maybe spark some imagination or something that I think this has some legs to it. And this can be a, like, maybe these are like little baby ideas and maybe these baby ideas can grow into something that I think is worth putting the time into. It's like Django News was one of those that kind of started off as I was having a conversation with Will Vincent, told him, we were kind of talking about different business ideas and different ideas. We kind of had this idea to do, let's solve the problem of there's so much that's going on in the Django world and Python world. You got to go look at all these different places that it's really hard for people to keep up. So let's try to make something that people can get a newsletter or one website they can go to and find out everything that's going on that's important and major. And that was an idea that we were talking about for maybe 30 minutes and decided like, well, how long would it really take to implement this? And come to find out, we could just go get a newsletter software that's off the shelf. And in 30 minutes, we had the first issue done.
Okay.
And I'm somebody that like bookmarks tons of things too. Mm-hmm. And so since I'm already, you know, collecting some of the material and he's looking at a lot of good beginner and educational resources, it really wasn't a lot of work. So that for me is a really good idea of like, it's an idea I could commit to knowing that I only have to put 30 minutes a week into or an hour. And most of it's stuff I'm already doing. As far as inspiration for ideas, sometimes when I'm looking at new Python libraries and somebody comes up with something and I go, oh, wow, that's really cool. These are the things I can build with this new tool. And so my mind kind of like works in that. It's like, what can I do with these amazing, magical libraries people are making? And so to me, I just kind of evaluate, can I do something with this and what do I want to do? Sometimes that's like creating something like for myself that makes me more productive at work, or it's helpful for a client that I'm working in, or it's let's do a newsletter for the community, or this will maybe help organize a conference. So I kind of evaluate it just based on situational needs. And if I'm really excited about a library, excited about a project, I try to make it not take very long to do because I know I will get distracted and never finish it.
Right.
Like you've been helping with Django News to help with like the new website that's been kind of done-ish since like December.
Yes.
And so
like everything.
And that's a perfect idea. Like it's like a functional thing. And thank you so much for helping with it. And it's like, it's a thing that like should be out there, but we just haven't committed to pushing it out, but we do a newsletter every week.
And I think that speaks a lot about your process. For me or in many others, a side project can be overwhelming because you just think about the workload you're going to get into if you continue with that idea. And my next question was going to be like, how do you select those ideas? Yes, but I think you already mentioned it. Like if it's going to be quick, you do it and then it's done. I think that same thing happened with the listing you had for Kansas and the restaurants. Can you talk about that project a little bit?
Oh yeah, it's called lfk.im. And so you know, with everybody shutting down here in the U.S., and I think Mexico's still shut down too?
Yes, we are.
Region you're in? So basically, my small town in my state got shut down, and so all the restaurants and stuff are going to close, but a few of them can stay open to do deliveries. And so I was trying to look around and find a list of resources for who's open, because, you know, we're under a mandated stay-at-home order, but you can leave to basically get essential food and, you know, groceries, basically. So I very quickly found the list of like 20 businesses that were open, but I knew there had to be others because I'm in a community of like 100,000 people. And so there's hundreds and hundreds of restaurants here. And yeah, I very quickly made a spreadsheet, got a couple of other people that were in the community that had their spreadsheets. We put them all together. And probably in a night, I had a spreadsheet of like 100 plus businesses that were either open, or I mean, you could either call or they would deliver food to your home. And so we just kind of started with that premise of, you know, here's what's available. And then using tools that I was comfortable with, I took it from a spreadsheet, exported it to a format that I could put into Jekyll. Jekyll is a static content generator that's the default. Like when you create anything in GitHub, by default, it uses GitHub pages, whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I just made a very simple one-page website that just listed what was open and what wasn't open. And then that's kind of grown into, I think, 200 businesses. And it's a ton of data, but these are just little iterations. And so like one point I think that's kind of crucial is something that you and I have talked about in some of your projects. That I think this is something I've read about that I think works very well for me is like, if you take a little bit of time every day and work on just one thing for your project, like if you know, like I want to create this one thing, but you know, it's going to take you a little while. If you do nothing more than you think of some idea to improve it. So you create like maybe a to-do list item on it, or maybe you like fix your documentation. It can take 30 seconds. It could take 10 minutes, but just doing one thing every day on a project, it just adds up over time. And then it looks like you've got a whole lot done, and you have. But sometimes that's easier than like putting off doing something for 2 weeks because you need a whole day to do it. So I just try to do a little bit on projects I care about every day. I try to prioritize that. So that may be the first thing I do every day.
You mentioned these goals you have for each day and preferably each morning. But how did you come up with these outcomes or goals for the day?
You know, for me, my priorities are like things that fit my brain that help me be productive. And so like the weirdest one I've ever heard of is just like make your bed every day. Right. And for me, I make my bed every day. I used to be terrible about making my bed. I wasn't like this sloppy person. But that to me is like a mental checkbox that I do every day. And I immediately feel this wind and it takes me 15 seconds, you know?
Right.
And so I just something about my brain. I probably blogged a couple times about like morning routines and stuff. And to me, it's more about like documenting what I do more than it's important that I do them. Okay. So, and then, you know, once I get into work, it's not really, I feel like my clients are driving what I'm doing anyways. So as being a consultant, I know there are certain days of the week. I mean, so I'm in my 40s. I've been a software developer for 15-ish years, I guess, or 20 years I've been in the industry in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
So I basically know that Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I'm going to get more done than I will the rest of the week. I still work all week, but that Tuesday, Wednesday morning for me is like gold. So I will use like when clients ask me to have a meeting with them at like 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, I used to try to push back and explain this to them and it didn't work. So what I started doing was using, I forget the name of it, but there's like a Calendly app. I use the free account and I just block off like on my calendar Tuesday mornings and Wednesday mornings. And so part of this is like knowing how you work, knowing when you're productive. I don't want to work all the time, but if I want to work on a side project at night because that's what I do for a hobby, then that's how I approach life and fun things is that. So like those days that I know work very well for me, I defend that time because that's really where I'm going to get the bulk of the good work I need to get done, or I will stage the rest of the work I need to do for the week. So I have these quick wins I can do on Thursdays and Fridays. Right. So usually by Friday, I've accomplished what I'm going to accomplish for the week, or it's impossible to accomplish. So by then it's like, I will try to put some hours in on Friday, but it's kind of a wash for me. So then, you know, there's a certain part of Friday by Friday afternoon, then it's a cool, here's a couple of community things maybe I can pick off. Since we're both on DEFNA, you're the vice president of DEFNA. That's when I look at stuff and go like, what have we not followed up on this week that we should have? Some weeks I'm better than that than others. But so I just kind of like look at what can I do? What are my quick wins? And that's my philosophy behind a work week.
Going back about how you came up with Django News and made that project, how are your mindset about building solutions versus buying them? You know, because it's so much quicker to buy something that's already done. But do you think that something like an expense that you can save with 3 hours of coding, do you weigh that options or just go with the easiest one?
I do. And that's a really good point. So I guess think of it this way. One of the things that appealed to me about Django News is if we would have built the website with Django and spent all of our time building the software, that website would still not be done. And we probably wouldn't have actually accomplished anything with it. Yeah. So the fact that we can say in 30 minutes time, we can be doing what we want to do on the project. Because I think a lot of times we look at projects and go, this could be so cool. Once we get this thing built, this is what we can start accomplishing with it. And that was the point of Django News, is we wanted to put news to people immediately. We didn't want to spend all of our time building that product. Mm-hmm. And there's value to it. I think I've spent, you know, thousands of hours building things that the world should never see and has never seen. And that's valuable learning experience. So don't discount that at all. But when you think about an idea, if you can find something that's off the shelf, then I think it's worthwhile and worth doing. The same thing happened to DjangoCon. And it's kind of funny because somebody calls us out on it every year. Like, why is DjangoCon US? Why is the website right. built in Jekyll and not using Django? And that was an easy decision for us because it used to always be Django. But like the main thing was a lot of the people who really want to help with the website, they maybe knew the programming and trying to like teach them Django while you're trying to run a conference is tough. So the people, you know, most of the time they're familiar with GitHub, or you can at least walk them through how to make changes on GitHub. And you can spend your time running a conference and spend your time making updates, the content and stuff that matters. I just don't think it means we're getting people more up to speed, you know, more quickly by working with tools that do the job. So both are very valuable, but you just kind of have to pick and choose where you want to spend your time. Because like, I know that I would spend tons of hours trying to build something and spend zero time accomplishing what I really wanted to do with it.
It's not necessarily the technology. I was talking to a friend and she has this idea of a side project, and she told me that she wanted to learn React with it. So that project has been like in hold forever because she hasn't gotten the time to actually learn it and to build a product that is like good. And I told her about Jekyll, like she could have a website running in 2 hours. And so she made the switch and the project is live now. So after, I don't know, 2-3 weeks of not getting any progress with like a complicated tool that she really wanted. If you let go of those technologies that, like I'm all for learning new things, don't get me wrong, but if that's what's holding you back, maybe that's not the best decision at the moment. And you mentioned something to me a while back about if you can invest 20 hours in learning on to building an MVP, you can easily use that time to build something final.
Oh yeah, I mean, you either spend the time building or spend the time doing, and that's right. Just your like you got to pick that. Use the tool that, you know, helps you accomplish the job that you want to accomplish.
And the other project I want to talk to you about is the heyguys.cc, because that, to me, it felt like it was very quickly thought of and executed. And are all your projects like that? Because from what you tell me about Django News, it was conceived very, very quickly and done, and it was something in the world, or how did that came about?
Hey Guys CC came about because Lacey Williams Henschel and I, who I work with, and we work together at DjangoCon, we work together at the same company. This is just an annoyance for us because I've been on calls a lot where, you know, people pretend that they're not women on the phone, or they think that guys is a particularly good gender neutral pronoun, and it's not. So this was just kind of a annoyance, I guess, we had. Because of just seeing people use it. And so I just started using it in my emails and saying like, how can you use more inclusive language and sending people to it? And then we set up a Slack bot too in DjangoCon. So anytime anybody used the phrase guys, it would just say, here's some alternatives you can use, because we want everybody to feel like they're a part of the community. So that was a quick one where I'm like, hey, we could do something with Jekyll. Lacey had the idea. I'm like, I will commit to buying the domain name if you want to work on the website. And so, yeah, it was another like hour project that's kind of had some legs of its own, which is, you know, we're pretty proud of doing, but her idea. And yeah, I think we're a little kind of before our times on that one, because I've seen it mentioned at some conferences and stuff. And
your go-to was Jekyll because it was so easy, or did you wait another options?
To me, I think it's easy because GitHub is so easy to work with. And they don't pay me to say this, But GitHub Pages, I feel like, is one of the easiest ways to host something. Right. And they're going to be around for a while. So they kind of fit that same philosophy of, I can check something in the Git, I can push it to GitHub, and it's going to be there on the internet for everybody to see in a few seconds. And so there's nothing to really have to configure with it. You can, you know, if you do something local with it, sure, you have to set up some Ruby and stuff, but most of the time I don't even do that. You look at our commit histories and you can see there's a lot of me throwing crap at a wall and seeing what sticks. So that's a thing. As far as like working on these projects, to me, I think what is the most interesting is when someone comes to me and says, I have an idea, or let's work on a project together. Let's figure out a project that we like to work on together. Because it's just a good excuse to work with somebody who, you know, you normally wouldn't get to work with otherwise. And so I would encourage people to do more of that, actually, because I know I have a reputation for being kind of busy at times and working on a lot of stuff, but I just really, I mean, there's a lot of community people that I really like, and I wish I had more time to approach them and say, okay, let's have an excuse to do a podcast together, or let's work on a project together and stuff. Like, I've enjoyed you helping with Django News and the website because, A, you're pretty good at design, I found out. You were learning Tailwind, which I really like a lot. It's a CSS framework. And so to me, that's just a good excuse to like get to hang out and talk about a project and work on it together. So, yeah, I would tell people to for sure do that more often.
Right. I actually have a school background in design. So I think my teachers would disagree with you. That's why I
did way better than what I did.
That's why I switched to coding. But some of the lessons really stick. So, but yeah, that's another part of side projects that you get to experiment with new technologies, and it's sometimes I feel like that's like the biggest barrier yourself and thinking, oh, it's too complicated for me, or I have to spend 2 hours learning something new. And if you just dive in a little bit, you can see if it's actually going to take those 2 hours or if you can have something done in 15 minutes. And how do you break down a project and figure out like, this is going to be a bigger thing, so I'm going to invest more time, or this project is going to be like a half an hour job between Lacey and me and it's going to be done forever?
So I think with Hey Guys, we just picked a template. I think Lacey picked out a template that she liked, and then we just used it because there's a million Jekyll templates out there. Yeah. And I think it existed before Tailwind might have even been a thing. With Tailwind, I like technology that lets me be productive and it rips barriers out. That's the kind of technology, that's the kind of solutions that I like and I think we should do more of, because it's just so much easier to learn. And right. So to me, Tailwind is just kind of that perfect mix of, I can give it to somebody like yourself who's never used it, and you can immediately do something with it even though you don't know.
And I think that's the biggest misconception about side projects, because, well, I was one of those people, but you always think that it has to be this big thing that can turn into Facebook, but it can be little things that you can take, like the annoyances of your day. And I'm sure if it's annoying to you, it's annoying someone else that can use that solution. So it doesn't have to be this big elaborate thing. And like you said, you can have something done in a half an hour, which I think it gives you great satisfaction and gives you a product that you will use. And so the next thing I'd like to ask you for parting advice for everybody, me included, that's struggling with wanting to start a side project, but being a bit overwhelmed with the immense to-do list that side project brings with it.
So parting advice. Wow, you really dropped the bomb on me for that last one. Well, I think what you said, I mean, I feel like I'd just be re-summarizing you, but it's worth summarizing. You're not going to build Facebook. Like, the average person just isn't going to build it. So don't worry about that. Build something that you find useful, something that, you know, maybe solves a problem for others is good. Everybody is an expert in something too. Like, you're an expert at all kinds of things. And if if building tools that solve problems for you, if you know that you're building something that's not just like, I'm weird in that, like, to make myself go to sleep at night, I have a timer that just turns all my lights off at like 11 p.m. at night or midnight. And so if you build projects to like frameworks for your life or frameworks for helping you do things, like if you can approach that with software that you're building for others, you know, don't discount what you know about the world, problems that you solve, and your expertise when it comes to building software, because you know, that's what sparks a Facebook, or that's what sparks something that's really big. Facebook is horrible, awful software. Sorry. Don't make the world a worse place with Facebook. So. I like the analogy, but yeah, it's okay to say Facebook's awful and okay. Sorry, Facebook. But hey, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Or can we go into an off topic, but I think something that may be useful for our podcast?
Okay, sure.
So PSF had an election last week.
Okay.
That went well.
For some people.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. So as somebody who was on, is it okay to talk about this?
Sure.
Is this okay? Okay. I was part of the election, and I was one of the directors, and so I was rerunning. Originally, I didn't run originally because I wanted to run. I just had a bunch of people ask me to run, and okay. So there's been some stuff that we have accomplished in the Django community. I have helped with that. I've played definitely a part, not probably as much as I get. I mean, I probably get more credit for it than I deserve, for sure, but okay. I also don't mind being a person who helped facilitate stuff and get stuff done. Rerunning for me was a very tough decision personally. When I saw the results, it was the absolute worst outcome I could have seen. Not because I have anything against any of the people who got on. For one, knowing that it was mostly white identifying people from the US, one person from Europe. Again, everybody is fantastic.
Right.
But I saw that and I thought the only thing that would have been better than this, but still bad, was if I didn't make it, but somebody else from the US made it. And again, nothing against US or anything like that. And so for me, taking myself out of it because, like, you know, I had this ethical decision, do I stay on or do I step down? And A, do I have the confidence that me stepping down means that the next person in line gets to be on the board? And, you know, reading the bylaws and checking, I didn't feel comfortable that that was going to be the case. Okay. But it doesn't matter. Maybe it would have been. But to me, the responsibility is, what can we change to make sure that future elections, A, people are educated to know how the election process works, and right. Can we actually make reform happen? So if I wasn't confident that we could do that, then I wouldn't be on the board either. Lorena Mesa started a thread on election reform. I want to see reform happen in something where representation is built into the process. But what I right. want isn't as important as your feedback on that forum post and telling the board of directors what you want right. and holding the board accountable to it. The system either works and we're able to reform things, or if the system doesn't work, right. we can also change things. So
I think that it works for the purposes of maintaining the status quo, if that's a way to say it, because it's a reflection of the community that's involved in Python and the Python Software Foundation. If you see attendees at PyCon, I don't know how many, but less than 100 people from Latin America can afford to go to those places. And from those percentage, we all are invested in doing talks and meeting people and building the community, because I think that's the biggest struggle right now, building the community and getting people to be involved. I think it's a new trend that people from Latin America are starting to run for office. There are only a few people like doing the work that everybody else that is able to run and get elected do. So that's why our odds are minimal compared to people that are involved as you. Like I said, I think it works for the purposes that it was built. And if you're not as involved and present or as visible, then you don't get elected, because I think that reading the proposals for everybody, I think it's a very narrow way to look at a person and choose them, you know? So I feel that if Valerie had like 10 pages of text, it doesn't compare to your presence on Twitter and on conferences. So I think that's our biggest disadvantage, that we are not as present or as visible as possible. And that also, like I said to you that last week, that's on us, because at least I voted, but I didn't campaign for anybody, or I didn't talk to people, I didn't help anybody sign up. I just showed up and voted. And I think that's the biggest thing, that we're not as involved, and it's something that's starting, so, and it's growing. And so we can rely on other people to elect us if we're not willing to elect ourselves. I don't know if that makes sense. But what we need is more people that think like us and that want to see themselves in other people represented. You're starting this conversation, Lorena, you, and I'm sure everybody behind is very worried or trying to do something about this. But I think if the system stays the way it stays, it's on us. The Latin community or every community, because I see that a lot of people were running that they don't necessarily have to be from Latin America. So we need to be involved in voting for the people that we want to see there, which is something that people from the US and Europe are already doing. That's why that is the result you get from that election.
When I look at the election, for one, like, I think you brought up a point about the text being confusing because, you know, if you look at the top four people, I think there's like 30 vote difference from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. If you look at like 2 through 10, I think there's like 3 to 7 votes different. So if three people would have not voted mm-hmm. for people they thought were adequate and voted for who they wanted, that whole election was different. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of when you look, I think there's like maybe 1,100 or 1,200 people can vote. I think 450-ish or 460 people voted or something like that. I think that the board needs to take a big look on what do we do from a better representation standpoint that, you know, these are parts of the community that are big. How do we adequately and accurately represent everybody is important and something we need to solve. So right, let's talk about the mobilization part. What I think is really important is a lot of people have said it's $99 to join the PSF. And that's one way to join the PSF. Better way to join the PSF is if you contribute 5 hours a month or more, you can join the PSF for free and you get voting right. This is where I don't want people to self-select out. By self-select, it's like saying you aren't doing enough, so your contributions don't matter. Exactly. But if you go to meetups, if you help with a meetup, if you're writing open source code, if you're writing documentation, if you are reading about libraries and you spend hours doing that so you can tell your friends about it, that is contributing in a positive manner to the PSF. And so if the system doesn't get changed and that's how the system works, make the system work for you.
That was a stopping point for me too when I tried to sign up for the last election and it said 5 hours, you know, like, no, I don't think I can measure or I can amount to 5 hours. But then, like, maybe it's not 5 hours every month. There are some months that I do so much more. If you give a talk a month, that's more than enough. If you show up to a meetup, even if you're in a Slack and people ask questions and you take the time to respond, that's enough. You can be involved little by little, but the more you are involved, the more you want to give back. And it's like a cycle. And it's just like a stepping stone, like for people to be interested, to show interest and to do things.
People just discount, I think, way too much. They think way too hard about this. And I get it. Like, I used to do that too. So yeah, I would encourage people to not discount yourself. Don't take yourself out of the running for this. And
yeah, that's another thing that I've been thinking about how to solve, especially during lockdown, because I feel like most of the people involved in Python are not on Twitter. So how do you reach those people that are, like, for me, it's very easy to do a tweet and think that my job was done. But how do you reach those people that are able to vote, but they don't vote?
I think there's value to going where your people are, you know, where your community is. And so if that's email or if that's meetups or that's video or whatever, go. I mean, I believe in you, especially.
And thank you. But I was doing it wrong, I think. I could have done more, but I'm going to help somebody get elected. If things don't change, then we're going to have a different strategy. It would be good to...
You've got 10 months. Right. 10 months. Like, we're already there. And part of it, too, is very... I would be tactical about it. If there are too many people from the U.S., don't vote for anybody in the U.S. Exactly. And just let people understand how the elections work and stuff.
Yeah, and, I'm sorry, Jeff, but I'm not going to vote for you again.
I won't run again, so that's fine. So yeah, so I think there's 4 board seats coming up next year.
Okay.
And I want you all to disrupt it. I love everybody who's on the board, and I know there's going to be people not rerun, but just in general, like, it's not a given that anybody stays, and
think it's gonna happen. Maybe not in 10 months, but we're definitely gonna get there.
11 months, it's gonna happen.
Okay.
10 months, you have to apply and be ready. But 11 months, I predict a different outcome. So
yeah,
you gotta mobilize and you gotta get people who want to vote.
Eso ha sido todo por este episodio de Espacios Abiertos. Para contactar a Jeff, síganlo en Twitter como @webology, WEBOLOGY. Suscríbanse a Django News para recibir los mejores artículos de la semana. Solo tienen que ir a django-medionews.com y escribir su correo. La próxima semana estaré hablando con Luis Mejía sobre tips para tener mejores entrevistas de trabajo. Para proponer tema o invitado, escríbanos a contacto@espaciosabiertos.dev. Y para contactarme a mí directamente en Twitter, estoy como @lacatialira. Muchas gracias, nos escuchamos la próxima semana.